Welcome to the Ruth Stone House podcast. I'm Bianca Stone, and today we're talking with the poet Diana Whitney about her amazing new anthology, You Don't Have to Be Everything. Diana Whitney writes across genres with a focus on feminism, motherhood, and sexuality. Her first book, Wanting It, became an indie bestseller in poetry. Her personal essays have appeared in the New York Times, Glamour, the Washington Post, and many more. A feminist activist in her Vermont hometown and beyond, Diana works as an editor and a yoga teacher. And you can find out more at dianawhitney.com. And Diana, we're so happy to have you here today.
I'm so happy to be here, Bianca. It's really great to be here in April outside. Yeah. It's like sunny and warmish with daffodils here in Vermont.
Same. I mean, yeah, it's like I was outside today and I just felt, we needed this so badly. I mean, it's like that every spring, but
it is. Spring. Yeah.
So this anthology is a poems for girls becoming themselves. And it's geared towards tweens or teens. Tell me a little bit about how this came to be, how this project, just your initial like desire to do this and how it actually got off the ground.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. The project kind of found me instead of it being like, oh, I carried this burning desire, you know, for years to bring a collection of poems for girls. I've been working on it, you know, to get the book in this form for, I guess, over 2 years, but in a way it came out, this is going to sound weird, it came out of my failed memoir. For many years I wrote that's not something I've talked about before, I don't think. I wrote, I think like an 85,000 word memoir about mothers and motherhood and sexuality and raising strong daughters and general generational patterns of female silence. And it didn't sell. However, I was working with an agent on the project, and you know, there was after that kind of loss and rejection, and now I'm actually really grateful that it didn't come into the world, because it wasn't ready, it hadn't found its structure, there was more stories still to be told. But I think it happened for a reason, because my agent knew I was a poet and had, you know, I'd given her a copy of my first book. So even though this project together didn't come to fruition, she came to me in the winter of 2019 and said, hey, an editor friend of mine has this interesting idea, and I think you'd be really great. Would you want to talk about it? And so in a way, you know, it's kind of like throwing out the boomerang. Like I threw out the boomerang, the memoir like didn't come back to me, but something else did. And so that was kind of the seed of the project. So I connected with the editor at Workman. And then I just really moved forward into making it my own. It was like, oh, of course I want to do a poetry anthology for teen girls. Like that's almost the project that in a way I've been like preparing for since I was a teen girl. And I didn't read much poetry then. Like I wrote poetry, and then I read a lot of what we were studying in English class, which were the dead white guys. You know, we did we did Robert Frost, and I remember like the poems by Auden that we like, you know, we scanned them and we did all the literary analysis. If we did one woman, it was like the single, like the token Emily Dickinson poem.
Oh my God, yeah. Right? It's like, it's so sad, because you get to this point in your poetry career where you're like, oh, Emily Dickinson's amazing. They just like make it so watered down and boring in school. It's like,
oh my God, I thought she was so boring, but it wasn't. And it was just like the poem to study to like take the test, you know, it wasn't it wasn't going deeper. It wasn't how do the themes, what was her life like? How do they touch us? And we didn't read any contemporary poets. And we definitely didn't read, so no women, no queer poets, you know, very few poets of color beyond maybe like the famous Langston Hughes poem, you know. So, I mean, I'm sort of giving you, so that was like my teen girl. And so, yeah, I wasn't really into poetry. I read a lot of like fantasy novels. You know, like Tolkien and Ursula Le Guin and like all these kind of, that was my genre. But I was kind of like writing secret poems. So when I thought about, wow, what would I have wanted to read and what would have like blown my mind? You know, these were the poems that I collected. And I guess from the start, I kind of knew I wanted to push boundaries in terms of content. And like the age range for the book is 12 and up. Okay. And I kind of was like, oh, can it be 14 and up or whatever the YA genre is, sort of like, but you know, they told me 12 and up. And so I kept saying, is this poem okay? Can we do this poem? Can we do the anorexia eating disorder poem? Can we do the sexual violence poem? Can we do poems with swearers? That was a big
right. one.
I had to get permission to have the F word. And then once that was okay, you know, then I don't know, I felt like then there was this freedom to really like cast the net wide and like choose both some of the seminal poems I'd always loved and then like explore and choose new poems that I'd never discovered before.
That's amazing. I mean, most people don't have to think about that kind of thing when they're putting together an anthology.
No.
it's such a different world in publishing.
Yeah, like the period poem, which like it actually, that's in the Rage chapter by Dominique Christina. That poem, she's a spoken word poet who's, I mean, she's incredible. She's also crossed over into, I mean, I hate these distinctions. She's crossed over to become, she won like a National Poetry Series prize, but she kind of, I think, came on the scene as a, in the spoken word genre and like won a lot of those, you know, Women of the World Poetry Slam. And her poem, the period poem, it went viral like in 2014 or something, like millions and millions of people viewed her reading her poem. And I discovered it and I thought, I want that poem on this book. Like I want this like gorgeous, messy, angry ode to menstruation in a book for teen girls. But there's definitely some F words. And like it starts, dude on Twitter said, I was having sex with my girlfriend when she started her period. I dumped that bitch immediately.
Oh God, yeah.
Right? And so I had to send that and be like, can we do this?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to know because I mean, we all have such different experiences and are exposed to different things at different ages. So it's like to some 12-year-olds, that would be like, oh, shocking, and to other 12-year-olds it's really not. And the thing is this also, it's on Twitter, and they're probably, if they're 12 years old, already on Twitter and seeing.
Well, that's, I know. And I guess like how your daughter is what, 3 maybe?
She's four
now. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She's really adorable.
She's so really cute. She's like, I was just saying to my husband today, I was like, God, she just keeps getting cuter and cuter. I just can't handle it.
Yeah, I've got 2 daughters and they're 13 and 15.
Oh,
and
wow. Okay.
So, so I will say they were my litmus test. And if you told me when my daughters were 4 or 2 and 4, that like this poem would have been appropriate at age 12, I would have been like, are you kidding me? Like, but I guess learning about Gen Z and their lives as digital natives and the content that they're accessing online or via school, unless they're very, very protected, they're already coming into contact with this kind of stuff. And like, why not have it be in a poem, in a really cool poem by a powerful Black woman poet? You know, that was some of my reasoning was that, you know, sadly there is this the reality that kids are exposed to things a lot earlier.
Yeah, and we have to give kids the benefit of the doubt. You know, it's like it's usually more like the adult's problem than it is the kid's problem, and they're just so adaptive and like aware. And I mean, even my daughter who's four, like I think she's less aware than she is. And then she'll say something to me where I'm like, oh God, you were listening to everything and mm-hmm. you're really understanding this. And I mean, it's just like a form of sort of like denial to think that they're not ready or that they won't be prepared for this. And it's, you know, it's a shame. I mean, you write right away in the introduction about some pretty heavy themes, like self-harm and sexuality at a very young age,
yeah.
and the kind of shame around that, and that your parents are, you know, they cut off your relationship with this woman, this other yeah. girl, and just that sadness around that experience, and that you are naturally drawn to writing a poem to express these feelings. And through that poem, you're able to reconnect with your mother.
Yeah, that sharing that, I think that was the first time I really written about that in a public way. Like there's certainly, for example, there was, you know, a chapter in that, you know, memoir that no one's seen about
right.
that experience, but I hadn't delved into it, but it felt totally relevant because I think that experience of shame for girls, whether or not it's rooted in that, like for me, kind of like a closeted sexuality and then, yeah, embarrassment, that parents getting close to like you discovering who you are, which is just really feels icky.
But
I think that shame is a universal for living in a, I mean, it's universal to all humans, but I think like living in a female body and that transition that you go through from childhood into like puberty, there's just, it's kind of just cloaked in shame. And so stepping out of it but first of all, like looking into it and being able to write honestly about it, I felt was really important to introduce the book. And there's like the chapter of poems about shame that
yeah.
I've, you know, spoke to me personally. And I hope that will speak to readers, you know, not all of them, not every poem in the book is going to resonate, but maybe there's a few, maybe there's one.
I mean, I couldn't help, but I just felt like I would have been really grateful for this book when I was a young woman. And I just remember finding this book called like Reviving Ophelia.
Oh.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
It was like a book for teen girls, but there was like moments in that book I felt so grateful and seen, and like I could underline things and show them to my mom and say like, this is mm-hmm. like how I feel. And it's not just me. Like this is, you know, this is a normal thing for a teenager to go through. And just having that validity, because I think a lot of the shame is feeling like you're alone in it, like you're yes. the only one, and that you're this freak and that you're broken. And I see that again and again in these poems, you know, that I'm bad, I'm broken, there's something wrong with me. And trying to find a way out of that feeling and to celebrate your own emotions. Like it's yeah. clear as that, you know, it's as simple as that.
I think that feeling of believing you're the only person in the world who's felt like this, I think that is really central to, I mean, it was for me when I was mm-hmm. like 13, 14, 15. So even thinking there's one other person who's gone through it, it offers some relief and yeah, maybe a sense of possibility too. Like, oh, you could write about this, you know, you could, mm-hmm. You could turn it into something else instead of it being like a stuck place.
Yeah, which can be very dangerous.
Yeah. And I guess, so, you know, the book is organized according to like 8 chapters, according to emotion. And mm-hmm. I will say originally I had a different idea. I was a little bit more poetic or metaphorical. Like I told a workman, I was like, well, what if we did it by the four elements, you know, earth, fire, yeah. air, and water. And they were like, no. And in fact, and then I also talked to my daughters because they were aware of this whole process as I was like trying to get the, you know, everything like the proposal and the book deal for this. And they're like, oh my God, mom, like the elements, that's just so cheesy. So they would always just tell me like it is. And they would be like, teens won't be into that. And I think it was my editor who said emotions. And I resisted because I felt like there's that stereotype of girls and women being emotional and hysterical. Mm-hmm. And I was like, God, I don't want to play into that old trope. And yet it seemed like if I could do emotions that were kind of taboo, you know, like rage and desire, or I call it longing, but poems about desire that we're definitely not comfortable thinking about that in terms of, I mean, we're sort of uncomfortable as a culture with women's authentic desire anyways, but especially for like adolescent girls.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's why like choosing the poems that kind of, I mean, these aren't poems written by teen girls or like featuring, you know, a 15-year-old speaker, but I wanted to put them, like to present them, like these are poems about longing, like these are experiences that, you know, human experiences that are available and relevant. And so that was my way into the organizing by emotions that I could, and I will say then my kids were like, yeah, I like that idea. You know, I like the idea of how do I feel today? I'm really sad. I'm going to go to sadness.
Yeah. I mean, that's, yeah, it's very, I think teens respond to that really. I'm thinking of Melissa Broder's So Sad Today. Mm. Mm. She like, I think that was like her Twitter thing that like teen girls were like obsessed with, just like very drawn to that. And it became a whole book. But yeah, I mean, I think we can relate, and your emotions are so intense when you're a teenager, and sadness is such a massive part of it. I'd love to read a poem from the book. I requested Skinning Ghosts Alive, and I thought that would be an interesting one to read if you wanted to read that.
Is that in sadness? Let me find it.
It is. It's on 114.
Yeah. So this is by Allison C. Rollins. And it's from her debut, which I think is called Library of Small Catastrophes. I might be getting that wrong, but it's a wonderful, the whole book is amazing. So I just, Library of Small Catastrophes, Copper Canyon, 2019. So I highly recommend that. But this, okay. I think this was my favorite poem from that book.
And awesome.
So Skinning Ghosts Alive. In the beginning, there is no yes. The amniotic sack, a dust jacket for the book of trauma. One plus one makes one. There is a nomenclature to this math, a method to the madness of creation. There is no he, there is no she. There's just a girl expelling Y from her loose jowled maw. The residue of jargon stains her lips boy red. We are never our own. This is why we are so lonely, why light-headed stars nestle their knives in the sky's black chest, why we eat men like air, moon's bulb shaved down to a hangnail's comma, straight as the line that reads you your missing period and the knowing that this cannot be allowed to continue, this belly not permitted to raise a question. Even lightning shakes the earth like a daughter. Who am I to object? Point fingers at the order. I was born bad, a trail of yeses parading round my hip's border, a trail of forget-me-nots sprouting from my father's chin. This tongue needs shepherding, as do these bones. I clench and carry the pain of my mother in my teeth, at the root a canal of fear. The space between each molar, the size of the closet my grandmother's mother locked her in as she cried no, promising that she would be good. So naturally, my mouth's second nature is naughty. This is how you end up leading the shell of a man to your bed. How you crack your peanut-colored self until the sidewalks of your cheeks are caked with salt. Your lover's eyelids half-lit houses. Terror veins its way down the stairs. It is cold in this thing we call a body. Who will tend to the fire with so few hands to go around? Even a snake loses itself in its skin, its life's throat peeled back in molting song. A second me lies somewhere on the ground, hollowed as the cicada shells I collected in the woods as a child, knowing then that the anatomy of loss was worth picking, if only to acknowledge that something has shed and not died. Something brown as me has left its skeleton behind, more intact than broken, as if to say we are living and dying just the same. This is why we are so homesick, why we hull ourselves in shadows.
It's a beautiful poem, and there's just so much going on, actually. She's got a lot of different metaphor and simile going on throughout the whole thing. And it's fairly opaque, but you get the sense that there's a very strong family story behind it.
Yes.
But there's just so much left unsaid and hinted at. But it seems to be something about inherited, you know, this inherited and passed down trauma.
Yeah.
Definitely. And shame.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I read it. The amniotic sac, a dust jacket for the book of trauma. Like that, you know, second line kind of gives us like the way to read the poem. And I think maybe because I'd been writing about generational trauma that this poem spoke to me. And I felt like I hadn't even thought about that phrase, the book of trauma, like that it's, I don't know, that it's like a text, like written in the body.
Yeah.
And you're right, there's not a clear narrative, like there's not a story that we can parse out. And yet there's so many lines that were so evocative. The moon's bulb shaved down to a hangnail's comma. Like that, I just felt very like in the mood of the poem. You know, even if I didn't know the whole story. And then by the time I think I was really, for people who can't see it, it's like a long poem in three parts. And by the time I got to part two with I Was Born Bad and Is It Cold in This Thing We Call a Body? Who will tend to the fire with so few hands to go around? But by the time I got there, like I was just captivated by the voice. And then the part three for me really felt transformative, that like that snake losing its skin and that this potential to survive the trauma, whatever it had been, and that the anatomy of loss was worth picking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, it's triumphant, and yet it also is acknowledging that it's not like things are fixed. You know, there's still these things, these traumas still exist. But you do get the sense that, you know, she's somehow transmuted this.
Yeah, transmuted. And I liked like the snake and the cicada, like the even seeing the cycle in nature, and like images of it being a cycle, like that to me felt, yeah, not just pretty or, I don't know, minimizing what's happened, but it felt somehow hopeful.
Yeah.
Something has shed and not died.
Yeah. A second me lies somewhere on the ground. Yeah. It's almost like shedding that, the skin of, you know, in the beginning, there's no, yes, she's born. I was born bad. She's born in the mother situation of being locked in the closet, too. but she can shed this skin somehow and move and be, you know, reborn on her own terms out to the
And you're right, like I forgot about that closet, like the, and that's an old closet, that's like the grandmother's closet, so this is
you're right
so it's like generations going back.
You're right, it's the grandmother's mother.
And that's really interesting because I was thinking about the maternal line and how, what we carry in the body, like there's that theory of epigenetics and how there's actually like changes at a cellular level in response to trauma, and those are passed down to like the baby in the womb.
I feel like that was a lot, my last book was like totally similarly interested in that too. You inherit, I mean, how could you not, you know, like you know, you think of like African Americans in this country, like how could they not carry that just generation after generation after generation of just this mistreatment. I mean, you're born with that pain. And you know, it's we all carry a certain amount of the pain that's come before us. And but then there's also the family experience that you participate in, because usually, you know, a lot of times what happens is the whole family is participating in this trauma and this drama that they all kind of identify with, and so they hold on to it and they won't let it go, and they sort of insist that you carry it as well as a sort of badge of like, well, this is who we are, this is what the women in the family endured, and you're going to endure it too. And it's a huge burden, and it's destructive. And you're sort of come to this point where you're like, how can I honor that pain that came before me and at the same time let it go?
I mean, that's a big question. carrying the weight of that, like being born into the women's story. And I definitely have felt that powerfully in my family, and it like still cycles through, like my family origin, even like my grandmother and her mother. And I only know like little bits of those stories way back. But, and I think that's interesting you mentioned, so Alison C. Rollins is an African-American poet. So like when talking about that, just the weight, the trauma of chattel slavery, of generations of ancestors enslaved. I mean, we can, you know, we can read the poem without that, but I think you superimpose that layer on it too. And it's like that, you know, it's even more vivid.
Yeah. Well, let's turn to another poem. What other poem should we look at?
Well, maybe we should mix it up and like do, do you want to do Evie Shockley, Coming of Age?
Yeah, totally.
Like move away from sadness and into...
Yeah. Let's see what else. Yeah.
Into longing. I'm looking for it. Oh, here it is. Okay. It's so you'll notice like some of the poems, this was like another dilemma working with a publisher that had literally never published poetry before, that they chose the trim size for the book. And then...
Oh, yeah. So...
And then I was like, they are trying to break the lines to make it fit. And I was such a stickler. I was like, and then it was our only option was to put it sideways on the book, in the book like this, so we could retain her lines. And so Evie Shockley is another one, like totally one of my poetry heroes. And this is from is from her book, The New Black. And she is such... her poems are very innovative formally, like the way she kind of invents new forms. And this one is actually an acrostic, which I didn't even realize.
Oh.
So if you look down, well, maybe I should read it first.
Yeah, read it first.
I'll read it and then I can talk about the form because it's just so cool. All right. So this is in the longing chapter. And I really like that there's a pun in the title. So it's called Coming of Age by Evie Shockley. Until I turned 13, until that afternoon in the locker room when I heard you sing soft and wet from beginning to end, so sweetly relentless, I forgot to be shy about the half-nakedness of my awkwarding body, paused with musky gym shorts in hand while time slipped into your drum machine and rivered over your keyboards. I'll bet I'd never heard a boy be so damn accurate about the state of my titillation. And because there was your voice, cream to dive into, to ladle out in long, thin threads for purple doves, I wanna be delirious. You, little red kiss, if I was your erotic city, you sang for me, for us. The holy promise of your shadowed eyes was my own and my best friend's daily church. Long phone calls from darkened rooms, my head between your hi-fi croon and her whisper. We sang for the whole heart of our friendship, pulsed with do me baby, with still waiting, and why we needed to see, be the reflection of your dirty mind in for each other for all those hot years. I still do not know. We talked of other boys, learning how desires of four truly woman bodies could be spoken from a man's falsetto. What it is to adore sex, a prayer for flesh to meet flesh like a thundercloud. Soft, you sang, and still sing today in my own and my lover's skin and wet. So this is an ode to Prince, who I adored. You know, I'm a Gen Xer, and like that, he was like the soundtrack to my like junior high. So I mean, me, Evie and Shackley and I might be around the same age, because I think I was 13 when I was listening to this. But the on the left hand side is a Prince lyric.
Oh,
that's the acrostic. Until the end of time, I'll be there for you. You own my heart and mind. I truly adore you. I didn't even realize that, but that's one of the formal devices in the poem.
That's so great. And talk about just a celebration of eroticism. And just that, you know, 13, I mean, that's really it. You know, you're just like, it's just like explodes in you, you know? It's just, yeah. It's so true.
what I love about this poem is like, there's a sweetness to it too. I don't know, like so sweetly relentless, I forgot to be shy. Like there's sort of that, there's really, it takes the reader along the discovery that the speaker's experiencing, listening to this music and the drum machine and the hi-fi.
Yeah, and I think for teens too, you know, like, I mean, you mentioned this in your intro too, but that like music is such a massive part of, you know, dealing with your emotions and feeling heard and seen. And it's such a comfort. And it's just great. You know, and also it's an acrostic really. I mean, you know, celebrating another work of art.
Totally, it's that too.
Yeah.
And I think like all the italicized words are little excerpts from Hit Prince lyrics.
Right, purple doves.
Soft and wet, erotic city, mm-hmm. delirious, dirty mind.
You really could,
yeah, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was gonna say, I was like, when I was debating whether I could put in this poem, I was like, does this just date me as like the irrelevant Gen Xer? Cause I love
this. Oh God, no.
Cause I love this Prince poem. And then I was like, you know, are only young readers, like, are they just wanna like a poem about Drake or Ariana Grande? And then I had to feel like this could be any, I mean, I don't know. I have a special place in my heart for Prince.
Well, yeah, I mean, you don't even need to know. It adds that much more like joy to it, like figuring that out or whatever, but you don't need to know it's Prince to enjoy it at all. And anyway, everyone should be listening to Prince. Yeah. Sort of timeless. Did you get the reception of this book, since it is, you know, it is pushing some boundaries about I don't know how you, it's not even censorship, but just, you know, sexuality and, yeah, and intense emotions. What's the reception been like?
I mean, that's a great question. And I mean, mostly, 99% has been overwhelmingly positive and joyful. And I mean, a lot of parents, grandmothers even saying, aunts saying, I'm getting this for my nieces. Mm-hmm. There hasn't, but I will say I did read one review last week, which was kind of like the review I'd been bracing for as I was choosing some of these poems, which was from like an Instagrammer who does book reviews, who's also a young mom, who said this content is not appropriate for, it should only be for older teens. And then she did a trigger warning. You know how you do that?
Yeah.
And said trigger warning, rape, abortion, eating disorders. And I will say, I mean, this is just like what it means to bring something out into the world is like, that derailed me for like a whole day. And I almost, this is like so embarrassing, but I almost like in my head, I was like writing back a defense and.
Right. Of course.
Right. And I'll be honest. Yeah. I mean, I can't reveal too much, but like my own daughters have been through some really heavy stuff. And you know, at the ages of like 12 and 14. So I was almost like, but blah, blah, blah. And then I just chilled out. I talked to some other writers and I actually ended up engaging with her like separately in like a chat. And I think we got to a good place. And I also had to realize, like, I guess if you are, I mean, this wasn't like my mission for the book. I guess my mission was really about bringing the poems to the teens who are reading them. But if this was gonna kind of push some, like make people uncomfortable, you know, that sort of seems to be what, like the older I get, the more that I do in my writing as a feminist and a truth teller. So it was like, oh, if I made it someone uncomfortable, that's okay. Like that wasn't a mistake. That wasn't a failure.
I feel like if you weren't getting that kind of response, then it would have been a little bit of a failure because it means you're doing the real work. You know, you're putting the real stuff out there, and you know, people have a hard time handling that. And there's so many different degrees of, you know, what parents are going to accept for their children. And they, you know, it comes out of a place, you know, it comes out of a place of just like fear, of course, you know, you don't feel like, oh, if they read about gay people, they're going to be gay, you know, that kind of thing. It's like, and it's just like, you know,
I think I was going like, there's statistics about like most kids are exposed to internet porn by like age 11, you know, like one of those like horrible. You don't even need to think about that for a while, but
yeah,
like, that kind of horrible statistic is kind of what I wanted to throw back. And also like, wouldn't it be to counter even those like images online, which are often degrading or misogynistic, like to have poems by women as like, as an alternative to have Evie Shockley's coming of age about like an empowered, or to be honest, I don't really like that word that much. I feel like it's kind of a buzzword, like an embodied authentic sexuality as opposed to being objectified, which is what like a lot of girls are on the internet, either in the worst case, like in porn or trafficking, but also even in just the way like we sell things through the images of.
Like, yeah, totally. Right? It's like, oh, just because you're not like overtly saying it with words, you're supposed to like pretend it's not happening. But then when a woman's writing it and exploring it like intellectually, it's like wrong. I mean, it's so true.
Would you want to read your poem from the book?
Sure. Talk about like hard things to talk about. Jesus.
Yeah.
It's like every time I read this poem, I want to like change it.
Oh no.
You know, it's just one of those poems. It's like, this was a really hard poem to write. But I really wanted to, you know, it's like we have those poems, like just really want to write them.
I wouldn't change a thing.
Okay, good. Yeah. I probably don't have a single poem out published in the world that I don't want to change something in. So, ones who got away with it. I still fantasize I can do something about it. That girl in the outpatient care facility for teenagers confided to me that she'd sneaked out to see a guy at his frat party, and he shared her with his three friends to have a taste after he was done. Is it supposed to hurt so much? She whispered to me. I mean, for this long after? She was bulimic, and we both hated our mothers. The next day I said, we should tell someone. And she said, I've talked it over with my best friend. She says I should be proud of it. She was 13 and I 16, recovering from those endless nights of shrieking across the house, out into the yard and into the cold moonlight to wish myself into some other species. The endless silent stooges, bangs and thwacks, some self-preservation up against inherited solitude, bent almost in half, the copper piping of my family grief that always raked itself across me until I was deformed by it, until I was defined by it. But damn it, I hope that girl's doing well. I hope she can keep food down and it's nourishing her. I hope her cells are cheering like parents at the stands at a game, even if those men still exist. Important men, I imagine. Men who now run conglomerates and have well-to-do families. Or maybe men I see every day at work, or whose books I read. And how am I here, with my life intact? I'm painful to the touch only when I don't light a candle and praise oblivion, give myself over to nothingness. And is it every day, or was it long ago, that I slid shut my teenage self's veranda doors and stepped onto the world's fancy balconies and was prepared to do something drastic, like live and live and live? I think because in that first poem we read, she references a Sylvia Plath poem in mm-hmm. Eat Men Like Air. Mm-hmm. And every time I look at this poem, I think of Anne Sexton. She has a couple poems to end and live. But there's one in particular, Live Now, Live Now. Mm. I just feel like there's such like a conversation in poems with other women poets. They pop up.
Yeah, that live and live and live, that just felt like an echo, like a really potent echo.
Yeah.
For that last stanza for me, really, like that makes this with the stepping out onto the balconies, like from the teenage self, and just imagining, yeah, a teenage girl reading this and thinking that that step was possible, you know?
Yeah. I think, you know, I mean, this is one of those stories that really haunts me as an adult. And I just feel like, you know, I do fantasize that I could go back in time and do something differently, you know? And I think about, you know, those men did get away with what they did. And it's so heartbreaking now to like think back to that reality, you know, like having her just sit there and tell me that. And to just at my age, you know, I just didn't know what to do. I knew it was wrong, but I was so lost in my own problems in my family, you know, with my own, you know, teenage shit. That I just there was no reason. I didn't, you know, there we were in this facility, you know, for troubled teens, and we couldn't even tell anybody about that, you know. It just doesn't seem right.
No.
And I thought writing this, you know, a girl reading this, I'd say, that's not right, you know, that's not yeah. right. And I think at that age, you are sexually aware, and you are interested in sex. And of course you're obsessed with boys or girls or whatever. And you think, oh, this is what it's supposed to be like. You know, you just don't know what's okay and what's not. You're still too young, you know, and older men can take advantage of that, obviously, and they do all the time. And it's like, we've got to like show them, you know, if we don't talk about it, then they won't know what to do. But also, like, if you have gone through things like this, you know, knowing that you can move on and you can live your life. And, you know, that's been a big part of just my own journey, and just being like, trying to let go of that time is really hard. Those teen years.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, one reason this poem like just got spoke right to me and kind of inhabited me is the frat party. My own rape was by a frat boy, frat guy. And it was, you know, I was 18, not 13, but there was like a context of it being like part of a larger kind of gender play ritual that, you know, boys and men were like enacting, you know, like, where it was then like bragged about on the campus. And, you know, and I didn't see that at the time, you know, just like, cute boy I had a crush on. And I certainly, I didn't, you know, I told people, but I didn't really understand what it was for like a really long time. And I feel like this poem captures that. And like the voice of the speaker, like we should tell someone, like, I feel like that's the voice of like all of us, like wanting to do the right thing, but not being sure what it is. And like, who's missing in here? Who's missing are the adults, you know?
Right. Exactly.
The caregivers, the caretakers are absent. Whether it's the parents or those like absent, like the counselors at the facility. And I mean, my sort of like feminist brain is like, you know, even if you had put yourself out there to tell something, like, I mean, I'm going to sound cynical, but if you look at like the legal system, like there's likely nothing would have happened and they still would have gotten away with it. I mean, yeah.
And especially then.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Historically. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just didn't feel like, I mean, the sad truth is that I didn't feel like I could be honest about things like that to my mother or to counselors or anything like that. I felt like I was a bad person, and I was constantly being told that I had to get it together and like, you know, be, you know, get back in school and get my grades up. And it wasn't about my trauma and like what I was living. And I think, you know, that I've carried that for a long, long time. And I'm 37 years old. I'm finally in therapy. It's like, what the hell? Cause I was so traumatized by therapy, like at such an early age, because there's just so much bad care out there.
Oh my God. I mean, I went, so after my experience in college, I like went to the college health center to see a terrible therapist.
Yeah.
And I can't even remember, but like they heard my story or my tentative, you know, recounting of whatever the story was. And I actually, when I was writing my memoir, I tried to get the notes from the therapist. Right. Cause I was looking for like validation. I was actually looking for a paper trail. Like, did any adult know?
Right.
And there were only a few notes, but they said something like Diana has some issues with men. It was something like that.
Yeah. Right?
So that's kind of all you need to know. Like, I think they might've been a graduate student.
Right. Of course.
Right. And so that's enough to traumatize anyone for a long time.
Yeah. I mean, going back to the shame thing and.
Yeah.
Well, I just can't tell you how grateful I am that you've put together this book, because not only are the subjects that it's talking about fiercely, but that they're actually really good poetry. You know, this is a really good collection of poetry. So, you know, it's one thing to talk about these things, but actually to see it done so beautifully with such diversity and such a breadth of experience, I am sharing this with everyone who has a child, and then also just people to read on their own, because I think adults who never got to, you know, adults who don't even read poetry, who never mm-hmm. got to work through these issues, I think that they can get a lot from it as well.
Mm. Oh, that's so good to hear. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I think I really did want, quote unquote, accessible poems, and not, you know, I think that could be sometimes a dirty word in poetry, like, and not in this case, it's like poems that let us in, you know, and
yeah.
So that's why I do hope some adults who are like, nah, poetry's not for me, might, you know, read this, flip through it, and find some poems this week.
I think that's happening. I think that's mm-hmm. happening. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Bianca.
I'll put a link to where to buy the book on the show notes page, and more about how to read Diana's work.
Great. Thank you so much. And I'll be sharing widely too.
Okay. Yay.
Take care.
You too.